That way I can just edit all this stuff out without having to like be like, oh, what the fuck do I do this shit at?
Yeah, right, because people don't want to hear that. Or do they? Do they want to know that, like, it gets fucked up? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe this is the real part. Folks, this is the real shit. This is since this is real motherfucking talk, this is the real shit. All right, so... Okay. What up? It is I, Hilda, for real motherfucking talk. Today I'm doing a solo. I'm doing a series on interviews. I'm interviewing really dope-ass people. So the first person that I'm interviewing... You're actually the first person, Porter.
I'm the first person? Holy
yes.
shit.
Yes! Yeah, you're no the first pressure. Person. Yeah.
What?
No pressure.
Wait, can I curse on this? What is this?
Yes, of course you can.
Okay, great. Holy shit.
Yeah, you're the first person. And so, Porter, can you introduce yourself real quick?
Can I introduce?
Give us a blurb. Introduce yourself, goddammit.
I'm an artist. I live in Brooklyn. I'm from LA originally. I make collages. I write short stories. I write art reviews. I do a lot of different things that I find interesting. I guess Renaissance man is what you would call it, like a person with no real thing, you know, to like grab onto. They try to grab onto everything. Like, oh, I like that. I like that. That's me.
What was the word that you called it?
A Renaissance man, but I feel like
that's the Renaissance man. Yes.
A more refined person. I'm not a refined person. Like
nonsense.
I'm a real person. So yeah.
Porter is a real refined person.
No, I'm a real person. I don't know about refined.
Nobody calls you by your first name anymore, do they?
I think my mom does.
I called him by his first name one time, and he was appalled.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, when we went to that what was that anyway? That music thing?
Were they like? Thing?
Yeah. At the what is it? What college was that?
Oh, at USC. It was this neuroscience thing. It was dope.
Yeah. That was pretty cool. I remember that.
Yeah, one of the many cool things that I do in life. Everybody, you should all hang out with me. Okay, so let's focus on Porter. Not me. So Porter does, yes. He's a Renaissance man. He does all that shit. But the way that
I've a lot of painting lately. Yeah,
oh, you're doing a lot of painting. So is that what you're focusing on lately?
Yeah, I'm doing a lot of painting. A lot of painting. It feels like very, and it's great because like painting, it's layered, right? So as you're going through stuff in your personal life, you relate it to, it's very hard not to like be painting. And stuff that's happening to you not come up in the painting. It's nearly impossible.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in touch with yourself at all, you know. So that's how you know. People say, "Well, how do you know this thing is good?" Or how do you know if this is good? You don't know that. I don't know that. All I know is how I feel after it's done. You know, the good or bad discussion really comes in like later. That's nothing to do with me. You know, no, I shouldn't say nothing, but. Very little or a lot less than artists seem to think. Mm-hmm. You're not in control of good or bad, you know. You're
in control feels. Of
how you feel. Exactly.
Just the feels. And the way that I met Porter actually and what I knew about Porter when I met him is I knew him as a writer. And so what's up with your writing lately? Have you been doing that still?
Well, you know, I've been keeping some kind of a journal, and I never know it's a journal until I'm done, but I've got a bunch of these notebooks, and there's words and, like, songs written down, times of day. Like, I remember things in strange ways, so, like, time of day on a date can really mean something for me. So I took all these things, and I'm sort of putting them together as sort of like this New York file, right? Mm-hmm. I'm just creating a timeline, and I have a lot of that stuff. I wrote a poem. And I made a collage out of it. And the collage is actually going to be shown at a gallery here in Brooklyn this Thursday.
Oh.
So I'm finding ways to combine the two things, you know, writing and you know, the visual art. So that's interesting, although it's very different from other stuff I've been doing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still new to me. But I like how this piece came together. Like I got a piece of wood from work. The canvases someone like donated, and I just didn't know what to do with them for months, and now I had a use, and the poem came together because, you know, I was looking at a certain set of words in another piece over and over, and I was like, oh, these work and these work, and it all just came together in like 2 days, but it was really building up
Wow.
for months. And so I don't mean, I just literally just said the artist or the maker of the thing can't say if it's good or bad, but I think it's a really good poem. I think it's really.
Would you be willing to share that later on, or you don't have to?
I kind of want the. There's a very important reason why, the first time I want anybody else to really hear it is, because I want it to be the first time when it on Thursday
when it comes out.
But I yeah.
Find and keep.
I mean,
your secrets.
I can send it to you, but
oh yeah, send it, but we won't talk about it here for now. So what got you into, I have a couple questions for you. I did have actual interview questions for you, Porter. What because I did see you at your medium when I met you, from what I saw was writing. Were you already painting by then, or is this something that is recent? How did you transition from writing to painting and back and forth? And
that's you know, interesting, because I don't think of it as like well, I guess I shouldn't say I don't think of it. I did not think of it as something that you could transition back and forth between, because for a long time I was, you know, making a living as a writer. And that's different. You know, some people make money, some people make a living.
Right.
You know, and I was making a living, was not making any money as a writer. And so I didn't, and I was enjoying it to an extent, because when anything, I think, and this might sound a little bit bad, but when anything becomes your job and that's the only aspect of it that you really work at, like let's say you work in the movie business and you're only a light guy, well, there are people who might want to be a light guy, but I don't want to be a light guy. I want to be the light guy one day, then I want to go work in storyboard, you know, then I want to go work in wardrobe. I want to do everything,
right?
So but for a while I was working, and so I couldn't really think of things that way. I had to think of, this is making me money, this is keeping me alive, just keep doing it. And I really don't know how I made enough money to survive writing, but I did. And now painting just comes back in because I did the other thing for so long, I'd forgotten about this, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Nice.
So I go back and forth, and I used to draw on the walls when I was a kid, like every kid did. And I would tell my brother these stories, like visual stories. And I got in trouble for that, so then I started writing and drawing in the books, in little notebooks. And I would make these elaborate stories. And I guess it's interesting, you know, it's a very adult question. Well, how do you transition between writing and drawing? It's like, this is what we do all the time as kids. We write and draw.
Right.
It's,
absolutely.
It's only strange when you pass a certain age where it's seen as something wrong, or there's something wrong with that person. Like, why don't you get a real job or a regular job? And, you know what I mean? And not, I don't think that's how you meant it, but I think that's a shade of that. You know what I mean?
No, it's exactly how I meant it. Why don't you get a fucking real job?
Fucking slacker.
Yeah, you fucking slacker. Why don't you get a real job? What else are you doing? God damn it. But that's a very interesting. And that's, I mean, after you saying that, it seems like the only logical way that it works. You know, the only way that it works for anybody who creates, right?
Right. I mean, in my eyes, sure. Yeah. But there are people who can do the one thing, and that's just, man.
And they love it, right?
Yeah. And maybe they get more out of the thing than I do, because I don't stay on it, you know? Mm-hmm. But I don't know if there's one thing I'd want to just do.
Have you?
But I appreciate that.
Have you always been comfortable with the idea that you want to do different things? Has anybody ever actually said, hey, Porter, why don't you do one thing?
No, I don't think so. Like, I think my friend, a couple of my really close friends will jab me a little bit, and say, "Oh, so you think, they'll say shit to me like, "Oh, Picasso, right? Is that who you think?" Stuff like that. And I'm like, "No, I don't think anything. I'm just expressing myself. Get off my back." But
You're
and they don't mean it seriously. They just try to keep you,
keep you on your toes.
keep you here. Yeah. And so I'm grateful for that. Grateful for people like that.
So, and I want to ask you something. So, what is you? It seems like you get inspiration from a lot of different places. You did mention that in art, in any kind of art, it seems anything that you're experiencing is going to come out. What is your strangest source of inspiration?
Oh wow, that's a really good question. I'm actually jealous of that question. Wow, I wish I had thought of that question. I've never heard someone ask me something like that. Damn, I wish I thought of that. First time that's happened. I want to damn strangest sources. Well, it's interesting for two reasons, and I'll tell you why. It's interesting because you're. I'll tell you why it's a good question first. Can I say that, and
Yeah,
then I'll answer?
absolutely. Go ahead.
So it's a good question because if anybody's listening who wants to learn how to interview people, you don't ask questions. You never ask questions, even though there were some general questions. Like you ask a question to get three answers. You don't ask a question to get one answer. That's a waste of everybody's time. People want lots of information at so if they're not on the internet and doing 12 other things and they're listening to your podcast only, they want to hear what this person has to say, and they want them to be like, "Oh, well, this is strange because of my childhood." And, they want them to go off on a branch, right?
Right.
So that's why that's a great question. So
Pat myself on the back
I
for
think, yeah,
that.
you're asking me two things. You're asking me, well, A, Porter, what do you think is strange? And then you're also getting, the real answer, whatever I say. And then that's gonna, you know what I'm saying? So that's hard to answer too. I don't like what would I consider strange? I guess for me, something strange that would inspire me would be something very like the word is not picturesque, but it's almost like a thing that's pretending, Like sometimes things can be very like in a movie or in a song or something, they might be very on the nose, like a Britney Spears lyric or something, right? It might be like very, very, bass, I guess is what I'm saying, on the surface. And then you think about the song later because it gets stuck in your head. And in certain moments, late at night, we can all attest to singing some of these very, very cheesy lyrics to ourselves.
Oops,
And
I
I think,
made it again.
yeah, like I did it again, guys. I fucked this up again. And you can relate with that heavily because it's simplistic and it reaches a good amount of people. And this is sort of no different from like, the music was better, but and the intent behind some of the lyrics was better, but pop songs are no different now than they were when Bob Dylan was writing them. Bob Dylan just had a better, and I don't mean this like in the sense of how he sounds, but his voice was what mattered, if you get what I'm saying. Like the way that he sang the things. So I get surprised by myself when things like Britney Spears, inspire me or give me any kind of feeling towards making something,
The most
and
unexpected places.
I love Toxic. I think Toxic is a classic pop song. There's no denying
Oh,
that,
yeah, I
but
agree.
it's perfect. Yeah, I guess that's how I'd answer that.
Interesting, very interesting. And that kind of leads me into something a little bit different. And this is something that I'm going to ask everybody, the co-hosts, which are my brother and my best friend.
There are two other people on this right now.
No, they're not here right now. This is they're hiding. They're
Like,
both hiding.
they've been very, very
They've been
quiet.
very, very quiet. No, this is a series that I'm doing on my own, so I'm interviewing people. But
Something that I want great. To ask I love
everybody is, this is real motherfucking talk. What is your most honest moment? Anywhere. Anywhere. It doesn't have to be in writing or in art. Anywhere in life.
Where am I most honest? Is that what you're saying?
What is your most honest moment?
What has been my most honest moment in my life?
Yes. Or however you want to ask.
Wow. Well, there's really only two things I can think of. And they're two, they keep going back and forth. I don't know which one is more honest. Maybe they're about the same, but
give us both.
Probably one. When I told the last person that I did that I love them, it's either that or, and the only reason that I can't decide is because the other honest moment or realization is I'm taking it came to me just earlier tonight.
Ooh, a new one.
It was brand new. And the realization or honest moment, like honest with myself, I guess, and honesty with ourselves is typically in my world, a revelation or an epiphany, something that everyone else knew already. And I'm like, oh my God, how did I not know that? Like my blind spots are incredibly large. And I've learned this the hard way.
Oh yeah.
But my realization was I'm the one that did the thing that caused my pain, you know, like, wow, that was me. And not only was that me, but I was playing a character. And I might do this more often than I realize.
Aww.
So I said, yeah, just like, and how many of them are there? And do I know right. who the original one is?
Oh.
This was a real thought. Right. And I was like, shit, it's not going away. It's a real thought. So that occurred to me tonight. And I don't know which is more honest.
I mean, those are two very honest moments, I feel.
The two most honest moments I've had in the past year, sure.
Wow.
That's
heavy. And I like, I really like the way that you stated that in terms of your blind spots. Because I feel that a lot of us have those, but you're willing to say, hey, I know that I have a lot of blind spots, like incredibly huge ones. And a lot of us are not willing to admit to that and be honest with ourselves about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I guess they're saying it's growth. I don't know. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, yeah. I hear it's called growth, and you know, getting to a higher vibration. That's what the cool kids are saying these days.
That's what the millennials are saying. I guess I'm a millennial too. So are you?
Yeah, we're millennials. That's what our fellow millennials are saying.
I suppose it's true.
Man, so do you feel that that's going to translate into anything for you creatively?
That realization?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess, I mean, if I examine it, if I go into, you know, my work in an attempt to examine things, sure. But I think more importantly than like being than just examining and writing and documenting and all that stuff, because I can do that for months and years, and I have. But if I don't go into the examination with an intent or awareness that I'm examining, it's just a bunch of fucking notes. So I have to also understand what it is I'm doing. You know what I mean? Like, don't just when you're examining or looking at things, you can't just do the thing. You have to know why. Otherwise you drive yourself crazy. Like, oh, now it's just a behavior. Now it's just a thing you do and you don't know why you're doing it. So that's the important thing for me, that if I'm going to make stuff, and undoubtedly, you know, that's all I know how to do, I have to know why each thing is happening. And I don't have to know as I'm doing it, but I have to know after. I have to understand it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like when somebody says, oh, you know, that's just what I do. You know, I'm just the type of person who is going to ignore the fuck out of you when I'm mad at you. It's like, why?
Yeah.
Why do you do
and,
that?
And I don't. Yeah, exactly. I don't mean to say that I have to understand the piece. I just have to understand what I was trying to get at, you know, or what I was looking at or what I was exploring. I have to know that. I don't have to understand the total, you know, whatever, all the meanings of, because that's also up for interpretation. That's up for other people to look at, and then maybe they find things about you. So that's how I mean to say, like, understand it.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So back to our questions. So, you've been living in New York. You've been living in New York since what, December?
Yeah, December 23rd.
Dang, you even have a date. And you're originally from... I did some research on you, Porter. I went online and I was like, let's take a look at what Porter's about. You're originally from Mid-City.
That's correct.
And you were raised by your mother and your grandmother.
That is also correct. I mean, raised... Raised is a strong word. I'm going to say that.
They were present.
Yeah. No, they raised.
That's a strong word. And yeah, so tell us the difference between, now that you've been in New York, kind of, do you feel settled yet? Does anybody ever feel settled?
Man. I mean, I don't want to. No, not at all. I do not. This is real talk. I can't lie.
Yeah.
I don't feel totally settled. In fact, I've considered, not immediately. I mean, I'm here, I'm working, I have a show next week, but I'm considering coming back, you know, in the next few months when my lease is up. And, you know, it's been rough. It's hard to go across the country and, you know, kind of restart your life with no, you know, connections, really. I mean, I shouldn't say none, but way far less than I have in the city that I was, you know, born and raised in.
Right.
So it's been a challenge, but I'm at a point now where I'm like, okay, I'm good. So when you say settled, what to me settled means like I'm only making art. I'm not working a regular job. Like settled doesn't even mean settled. Settled means we're building the rocket ship, you know?
Right. And you're like,
we're
not there yet.
You know, exactly. We're live at Cape Canaveral and we're building a rocket ship. Everybody come watch, you know? Like, I'm making stuff, and I'm doing stuff on a bigger scale or a smaller scale, but we're changing, you know, the level of what we can do based on how much time and money we have. That's where we're trying to get to.
And that kind of leads me into the next question I had for you is, if you had all the resources right now, at this very moment, what kind of project would you come up with?
Well, I think.
Don't mind the truck outside.
That reminds me of home.
Yeah, LA is here. You can always come back.
LA is live.
We'll be welcoming with open arms, and the food truck.
New York is live as well. The food truck. Yeah. There are no ice cream trucks here. I don't know. I just haven't seen them. I don't know. I haven't seen them. I don't know what's going on.
What's going on, New York? What's up with the ice cream trucks?
If I had... So the way I take this question is that if I had not unlimited resources, but a good deal of resources and... meaning more money, a bigger budget to do the things that I'm already doing. I guess one of the things that I've been wanting to do is start a small, obviously small. It would have to start small. A publishing house. I think, you know, literacy is very important, and like it's the last thing we have left. You know, people being able to read and learn, but even with that, you know, you have to be able to discern what's right and wrong. So I would want to be more heavily involved, more aggressively involved in like literacy, and not only literacy, but making it known that the publishing world doesn't, even though it is, it doesn't have to stay this white, it doesn't have to. And if you are young and not part of that group, and you think that reading is not for you, well, that's totally wrong. And you should know that it's possible to do something in that world, even if you don't look like everybody else. You can do it. It's definitely possible, and it starts with somebody or more, even more. There are tons of great publishers out there right now doing this work. I want to join and make it even make the web even bigger, and just continue to get good work, strong work out to people, and get and find people who may otherwise not even know about or how to, get their work out, That's that would be my number one goal right now. In fact, I don't think I need $1 million to do that.
Exactly. Yeah, you don't. Wow, that's dope. So, shout out to POC, by the way. Shout out to POC who are out there doing their creative writing, their technical writing thing. Do you feel you have this idea of a publishing house? Would you, besides, I know you kind of mentioned POC, or you kind of implied, but what kind of material would you want to be coming through your publishing house? Or is it something that's kind of like anything and everything, or would you want a certain type of idea, focus?
I think more along the lines of not really themes or types of or genres or things like that. I'm thinking more along the lines of three sort of pillars. Like, does your book in some way fit into one of these three pillars? And the three pillars would be cities, not necessarily cities as characters, but somehow talking about cities. So this could be anything from a nonfiction book about building better subway systems to a crime thriller set in, Brooklyn. That's about a city. That's also about a city.
Right.
The other category would be color. So dealing with color somehow. And then the other category would be, I forgot what it was, dealing with shape somehow. So color, city, shape. And as long as your book was about some one of these things in some way, or fit into these categories in some way, then it would be, and we liked it, then we would go forward with it. I think, yeah.
Nice. Nice. That's a very interesting set of criteria. That's really dope. And I think that we definitely need more publishing houses run by people of color. Like Porter said, it doesn't all have to be white. And I feel that. I think lately there's been a lot more I feel people of color coming out and kind of banding together, and everybody's kind of putting their stuff out, but there's still not as much representation, especially in publishing houses, big ones either,
Yeah, it's literati is still very, it's still very much the way it's always been, and the numbers are, somewhat changing, but you gotta push, you gotta push, and you gotta make sure that, and it's hard because it's not always gonna happen, but while you're here, if you have the ability to not only work and get your stuff out to people as best you can, as best you know how, but the people around you and the people around them and the people around them, if you know that the talent is there, you should do everything in your power within the people that you know and the things that you know to help them get their work out. Like, that's your responsibility. That's why we know people. That's why artists know artists. And there's been a lot of, like you said, coming together now recently, but there should be more. We should be aware of, like, oh, my friend that's an accountant, they're also a writer and their story's good. Oh, it was pretty good. And you put the story away and you never, no, show it to your cousin who's a publisher. Why not?
Exactly.
We have to think more in terms, you know, we have to.
Right, just more collaboration in between.
Yeah, think collaboration all the time, always, always. People are like, oh, you're going to do your own thing anyway. You're a human. You're going to do your own thing. But if you think collaboration all the time, you're going to force yourself the other way a little bit, and it's going to help your work every single time. I'm sure of it.
Absolutely. And I feel like that's something that I've also been recently have come to that realization. And I know a lot of people have had this realization for a long time, but to me, it was pretty new where I was thinking, dang, I have to really link up with other people who are doing the same thing as I am. Other people who have the same kind of passion, say, for like literacy and information as I do, or same passion for fiction and writing and putting these weird things out. And
right.
And once you start putting the net out there, throwing the net out there, and you start meeting different people who are doing the same thing, you're thinking like, oh, I wasn't alone. I thought I was the only one. Turns out I wasn't.
One of my older friends used to say, he would say, cast a tuna net, cast a large enough tuna net, and you're going to catch a dolphin. Like, there's going to be a dolphin in there. It's a terrible saying, but it's, I think, true. I don't know.
Yeah, very gruesome. But, no, it makes sense. It makes sense.
One of those dolphins is going to get caught.
Yeah, one of those dolphins is going to get caught. Magical, man, magical.
Yeah.
So, awesome. I love that. And speaking of collaboration, have you worked with other creatives lately, or what do you feel? Have you felt that you've had any really awesome collaborations, or do you feel that you get along with other creatives?
I've worked with other artists recently. Last year, I did a photo book collaboration with Lester Guijarro, and that was cool because that reminded me of doing like zines back in the day when you would do zines with your homies. Like one homie does the pictures and then you do the caption or whatever you feel, you know? But it was cool. Like, I miss doing that. Like, immediately writing down what I think about an image, as opposed to, like, you know, looking at an image and trying to, like, I don't know, talk about it or draw it, you know, like looking at something and writing, like, immediately, like, what is that? Like, what are these thoughts, you know?
Yeah.
So that was cool. Yeah. I like working with photographers, you know, other writers, poets are fun. Like, they have, you know, fun stuff to say, and they look at language in a different way. So they're always very interesting people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Awesome. And do you find, kind of in the same vein, do you find inspiration in other people as well? That are doing the same thing that you're doing?
Hold on. I had a glass. I had some water. I don't know. Do I find inspiration? I'm sorry. Do I find inspiration? I have cotton mouth. Do I find inspiration in other people? Is that what you said?
Yeah, have you found inspiration in others?
Yeah, other people inspire me all the time. I mean, totally. I mean, other people inspire me, like, day to day. Like, not maybe not even artistically all the time. But, you know, people inspire me to do better, you know, and you know, be more kind and understanding. Because I don't know if I'm naturally that way or if this is how I've become, you know, and maybe people don't even perceive me that way. But people inspire me that way. And in those little ways, that does help your art in some ways, because you'll wake up in a better mood. You'll wake up a little bit earlier and you'll say, you know what, I feel like throwing some paint on this. I feel like editing this. I feel like writing this sentence. You'll wake up better because you'll sleep more because you just feel better about your fellow person, you know. You're like, oh, people aren't bad. People are great, you know.
Cool.
People are cool, you know.
They're awful.
Exactly. And then so like I'm a very visual person, so yeah, people that, have very striking styles, they jump out at me. And yeah, I love very bright and like I like primary colors. I like to use those a lot. Bold lines outlining in black, like, 90s classic, or I'm sorry, 60s, 50s, and 90s classic cartoons.
Oh, yeah.
Just Flintstones, The Simpsons does this. Who else? A ton of the older Hanna-Barbera cartoons. They're all outlined in black. I don't outline anything in black anymore, but there's always a bold color that's sort of the fixture or the focal point of the piece, and that acts as, like a skeleton. This is my one-dimensional skeleton for this fictional person,
Yeah, and oh, you wanted to see Porter's drawings and paintings. They're pretty awesome. Last time I checked, they were a lot of different faces. And I remember once we were at Denny's. I think it was at Denny's, and you created Mr. Little Body.
Oh, yes, Ted Littlebody.
Ted Little Body. Yeah, he created this character. It was big ass head, little ass body. And there was even a little story to go with him.
You have that, by the way? Do you have Ted Littlebody?
I might somewhere. I think it's somewhere in one of my drawers. I don't know what I did with him.
I was looking for that. I was like, what was his story? But I remember it being very funny. I was laughing quite a bit.
It was Ted Little Body, and he was talking about not being distracted by his little body.
Oh yeah, he was like, "I'm Ted Littlebody. Please pay no attention to my very small body." My name is a is a yes, you reminded me. My name is a the result of a very unfortunate marriage.
Wow, I can't believe you remember that whole entire thing. Well, you did write it down, so you would remember that. It was
Yeah, but
amazing.
see, you triggered my memory by just saying that first line.
Right. Yeah, and you know what's awesome? That's inspiration. That's definitely inspiration to me.
Yeah, see, there you
And
go.
yeah, oh, I kind of wanted to backtrack a little because you did mention something about, kind of understanding other people. What I understood was kind of more compassion and seeing how other people think and also applying that to yourself. And like you said, you wake up better moods and all that. That's really like, that's awesome to draw that inspiration from other people, to be able to say, hey, I see this person doing their thing. They're being compassionate to other people. They're hearing people out. They are being open to other people. And that really inspires me to also be this way and not, be mean to other people or to not take things personally that other people do. Therefore, it creates a better environment for me emotionally. Therefore, it makes me more productive. I don't want to lay in bed for the rest of the week, which happens to me sometimes.
Like people should sharing energy with other people. That's why we're here, you know?
Yeah, I
That's
love
why
that.
we're
That's very
Like,
inspirational.
that's the
Being
only
this.
reason
Yeah, exactly. To just help each other out, right? Give each other a
That's
hand.
it. That's it, man. And we're fucking it up so bad. We're fucking up so bad.
Oh, yeah, we definitely are because people are just so caught up in their own thing lately. I actually wanted to mention something because you inspired me a lot at one point. I mean, not at that one point in life. Never inspired me again. No, you
Back in the
inspired
day.
me when we were friends. You inspired me a lot because one day I was sitting there and I had been kind of jotting stuff down, and one of my friend Kelvin had actually said, hey, you should just try writing stuff, like writing poetry and things like that. Because I was writing little haikus and I was just like doing stupid shit, And he's like, you should just keep working at that. And then I wanted to write a short story, but I felt like I was kind of stuck. I was stuck in creating the actual story and the characters and the dialogue. And then I hit you up actually and I said, hey, Porter, you're a writer, And I had read your short story, The Future Mayor of LA is on Adderall or something like
Oh,
that.
you read?
I read that. I actually read it again today.
Oh,
It was
shit.
hilarious. And I asked you, I said, hey, I don't know, what can I do to, what kind of exercise or what can I do to kind of open up my creative juices, basically, to get them flowing. I don't know where to start. And you told me, you know, you could get a notebook or something like that. You basically said, just jot down things that people say, things that you find interesting, or maybe a quote or something, a dialogue that somebody has with you or something that somebody says. And I said, okay, you know what? I'll try it. And then I did. And I have like a whole little notebook now of things.
Are you serious?
Yes, I actually did.
What? You never told me that.
Yeah, I forgot. You know, I completely forgot because I remember you told me and I was like, okay, cool. And I just, you know, I kind of did it and then didn't really think about telling you
that. Are you serious?
Yeah, and I have it. I have the notebook still.
How many pages is this?
Right now I have like a few, like I have, I can't say about a quarter about this little notebook filled. It's like this little Moleskine.
So it's like 25, maybe 30 pages.
Yeah, like a good amount of pages of just stuff.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, like I have things that I kind of wrote down, like, oh, like little, I even wrote sometimes little tiny miniature stories to go with certain things. And I was like, oh man, this is such a great thing that Porter gave me.
Can you share one? Can you share like one of your favorite ones that you go back to a lot?
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah. Oh, there's so many. Let me see.
Oh my God. I have bated breath. Is that a thing people still say?
Let's see. This one is, every year is an exciting new opportunity to catch a new flu. You can write a Dr. Seuss book about it. There's a new flu, a blue flu, a swine flu.
You wrote that?
This is actually something that my fellow librarian told me. It was on the subject on the mutating nature of the flu virus. So I wrote it down and I was like, this is dope. This is great. What a fucking poetic moment you just had.
That's beautiful. Right. Did they even know you're doing that?
Well, no, they don't usually know me. I don't tell anybody because, you know, and it, actually one time, let me tell you something. One time
did they know that they were like rhyming and like, were they doing that intentionally?
She did it on the fly.
Oh shit.
She did that on the fly and I was like, wow, poet.
Special, that's special.
Special, different. And I actually left the notebook in the bathroom one day and one of my coworkers found it and she was like, hey, I found your notebook. I noticed that you're like writing stuff about like what's going on here. She's like, I have to be careful of saying anything weird because you're going to write it down. I was like, oh, yeah, definitely. I'm going to write it down. So if you say anything weird or hilarious, believe me, I'm going to write it down.
Oh, shit. That's beautiful. That's
great. Yeah. So you really inspired that. So thank you. Thank you so much for inspiring me to do that.
That is amazing.
It helped a lot with my writing.
That is so good.
And yeah, so now I've just been practicing.
I can't take, I mean, I'm glad I told you that, but that idea is partially two other things. Like, there, back in the day, I think it was called like a flaneur. A flaneur is basically like a poet that just walks around town, like back in the day, 1700s, and he writes down pieces of conversations or whole conversation. And then he comes back to his, you know, chateau or whatever. And he sits down and he like writes sonnets and little poems based on things he heard in town. And he's called a flaneur. And so I don't know what director it was, but I was watching something. Maybe it was Tarantino or somebody like that. I mean, or him. I don't know who's like him. But he was saying that to get dialogue for certain actors or for characters in his movies, he would go and hang out with that type of person. So if you wanted police dialogue, he would hang out where cops were. Or if you wanted, you know, pilot dialogue, he would hang out where pilots were. He would just write down what they said. I don't know if it was him or not, but I know that that's a tactic, and I use that too. And I think it's very effective. I think it's going to help your writing. It's real dialogue. Like, we have to use real words. People are so afraid. They're like, I didn't create anything. It's like, you don't understand. You don't, like, you're so far off base. You don't just write down what they said. You know, that's the beginning of your story, or maybe that's the end, or maybe that's the beginning of a character or a thought. I don't know, but it's not. I love it. I love it.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's really dope. That's funny because I've told you this before that. It was something that happened. We're coming from something. I don't remember. We're doing something somewhere. Very, very vague. And I remember you told me something about a story, and I was like, oh, that's really petty, man. And I was like, oh, petty man. Oh, I want to create a story about a man named Petty Man and all his attributes.
Right.
And then I created this character, which I haven't written the story about yet, which actually it was this week's project to write the story about Petty Man too. But you definitely, that moment in time was like a moment where I thought, oh, this is a great character. I want to make this person.
Wow. And I inspired this Petty Man because I told yes. you something petty I was doing, right?
Yes, you inspired me.
Was I by chance talking to you about how I was cheating at a card game and was mad that I got caught cheating?
No, but that's good too.
Okay, never mind. I don't know who I was talking to.
Yeah, it wasn't me, but now we all know
that. Yeah, well, they caught. I told him, like, look, I'm. I don't know. I was just upset.
You were just upset.
Look, man, I was just really mad.
Yeah, I got caught. So what? Yeah, that's the nature of people. It's like people who get caught cheating, they get mad at the person who caught them. You know,
right.
Say in a relationship, somebody's cheating on the other one, and they get caught, and then they're the one that's mad. It's like, hey, wait a minute, right. Why are you mad?
like the wife in Boogie Nights, remember? She's like, close the fucking door.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's one of the very few things I remember from any movie, because usually I don't remember shit.
Right. Oh, yes. That poor guy. Yeah. I mean. Yeah.
It was a good character. It's still a good character, and I'm very glad that you inspired that.
Well, you're welcome. Yeah, shit.
Oh, and I got one more question for you.
Yes.
Are you currently reading anything?
I knew you were going to ask that, and I was hoping you would ask that, because I have been gifted, not gifted, I'm borrowing, but for the first time ever, I am reading Neuromancer, and it is very, very, very incredible. It is written in such a fast-paced way that I've never read anything quite like it. It feels like I'm reading, I don't know, like, the first time people heard jazz, they were like, what the fuck is this? You know?
Oh, yeah. Damn.
It's incredible. William Gibson, a Canadian writer. And I was reading about the book a little bit today. When I wasn't reading the book, I was reading about it at work. And one of the interesting things about Neuromancer, it takes place in the future. The writer, he saw Blade Runner. He watched the movie Blade Runner. And he had already written like a third of his book. And he said, damn, like people are going to think I just ripped off Blade Runner. There's no way I'm going to finish writing this book now, blah, blah, blah. So he restarted the book 12 times. And, you know, it's his novel. And everybody loved it. They're like, this is brilliant. This is amazing. This is fantastic. And, of course, it is. It is so insane. And wow. Just... God, I love this book. And I haven't picked – I was reading – before this, I was reading On the Road by Jack Kerouac, and I didn't finish it. I got more into it as it was going, but the pacing was just totally different for what was going on in my life right now. And I think this is more suited to what I'm feeling, you know. So I'm a person driven by feeling. So this is very fast-paced, and everything's kind of nuts. And On the Road is like – I jumped in the back of a pickup truck in Wisconsin, and I'm like, oh, boy, this is exciting. You know, it's the 1950s. Like, I couldn't even exist in this situation, you know. So,
why would I be interested in this?
Right. I feel like I'm in Neuromancer somewhere. I'm in here somewhere. And on the road, I'm, like, not allowed in that part of the country. So it's hard for me to get into it.
Yeah. Feel that. So Neuromancer by what was the author?
William Gibson.
William Gibson. I'm gonna have to check it out too.
I love him, but I just can't get into it right now.
Right, you're like, maybe. I'm more into this other book. Count my attention.
This crazy drug-filled book, yeah.
Hell yeah. Love that. Oh, before we go, before I forget, you said that you are showing some pieces in a gallery, right? And you said this is your first solo show. You know, you told me this the other day, actually.
Oh, no. This is not a solo show.
It's not a solo show.
It's a group show, but I'm showing a collage, a poem collage, I guess you would call it, at Ground Floor Gallery here in Brooklyn, in Park Slope on Fifth Street. So, yeah, it's a cool show. There's artists. So you're mailing your art in from all over the world.
Awesome.
Got people from Italy in the show. It's an international show. And
awesome.
So
that's dope.
I'm local. And I'm right here, and I'm right where I'm supposed to be. I feel like that all the time, even when I feel lost. And I don't feel settled, but I definitely feel some level now that, you know, New York is my home, at least for now.
I love that. I love that. I love the idea that, like, that you just said about this is where you're supposed to be now.
This is where I'm supposed to be. I'm here. Right?
Like, I'm fucking here.
This is where I'm supposed to be. Wherever you are is where you're supposed to be, like, just factually. You know what I mean? Even if you're not right. Supposed to be there. You're like, there. I should get out of here. Yeah, you're there.
Yeah, you're already here, so. Enjoy it. Have a good time.
So, yeah.
It was awesome having this conversation with you, Porter. I learned so much about you in just these couple of questions that I asked you. You know, I didn't know that you wanted to have a whole publishing house. That's fucking dope. That's something.
I have bad ideas too. Do you want to hear those?
What was that?
I said I have bad ideas too.
Oh yeah, what bad ideas do you have?
Well, I don't. Well, this isn't a bad idea, but like, I also want to own. I don't know if it's a fish and chips joint or like a fried chicken joint. I have issues with both, but it's called Porter's. Okay, and
great
we
name,
only.
By the way.
I know, right? We only serve porter beer, port wine, portobello burgers with portobello mushrooms. This is real. And porterhouse steaks.
Nice. Okay, so everything's porter.
And, yes, and also it's a library. It's a Ooh. Cafe, a restaurant, a bar, and you can check out books. And this is real. This is a real idea. And if someone else is hearing it and does it first, well, whatever. This is just this is a freebie. But you check out books, right? And you read the book. And if you come to the bar or maybe the steakhouse portion of the building and you write a good book review, we'll post your book review online and we'll give you, you know, a free meal. There's no limit on that.
Hell yeah.
So you read the book, you write the review, you get a meal. Or a beer, or whatever you want. And then, you know, maybe we'll hire you as a librarian. I don't know. That's
one. Damn. Can you start that so I can go in and just.
Yeah, let me get all of the capital together.
Yeah, please start Tomorrow. That. Then you can, and I can go work at the library of Porter's.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's not a bad idea. I don't know what
bad idea.
Oh, I know what I was going to say.
What were you going to say? Yeah, what's the other bad idea? We want to hear it.
You want it? It's not even bad. It's just silly. So remember MTV Cribs?
Yeah.
Okay, so in Cribs, everybody had like the one like crazy room. Some houses were just crazy rooms, but most normal people had like, oh, this is my perfume room, right?
Yeah.
Or this is my room of mirrors, you know? So my crazy room would be a room that's sort of like under, not necessarily a pool, but like a body of water in the house. And, this is your underwater movie theater and all of the chairs in the movie theater. This is the only part of this idea that I wanted to tell you about. All of the chairs have seat belts, like airplane seat belts. That's it.
The airplane seat belts. Underwater.
That's it. That's the whole idea. Yeah, I just want seatbelts on the chairs.
But it would be underwater. Would it be underwater?
It's underwater. You look up and there's water. Maybe there's a shark up there. I don't know.
Ooh, danger.
Yeah.
But the important part is that there's seatbelts, airplane seatbelts.
Yeah.
You know, I hope that this happens for you. I really hope so. And if I can help it, then I'll help it.
Of course you can. If we build it, they will come.
Yeah. There's somebody out there that's thinking, damn, you know what I really want? I want to go to a theater where they have airplane seatbelts on the chairs.
And sharks above me.
And sharks above me for added danger.
Right? Can you imagine watching Jaws like that? Now that's how you watch.
Yeah, that's the only way I ever wanted to watch Jaws. I think I watched Jaws once in my life. And now if I ever watch it again, it will only be under those certain circumstances. So thank you, Porter. Right.
You're welcome.
Thank you for that. Yeah. But yeah, you're, even the bad ideas are, I think, are really awesome. When people tell me they're bad ideas, I'm like, that's really fucking dope. I like that idea. That should also happen because everything right. around us is ridiculous anyway. Like, why not one more ridiculous thing? And even if you think it's ridiculous, somebody's going to be like, hey, right. you know, I actually really want that.
Right? Why not join the ridiculous party?
Yeah, why the fuck not? Our country's going to shit anyway. So
I feel that. It is. It's. I mean, God, it's terrible. We didn't even talk about that, but yeah.
Yeah, we didn't. That for a reason. For a reason.
There's nothing to say. There's
nothing good to say. But thank you for sharing your thoughts, Porta. Thank you for sharing all your thoughts.
Anytime. I'm very honored to have been your first interview, and I hope that, you know, you continue to talk to more people and gain more knowledge and spread more knowledge. And I hope that I hope you get some really cool guests.
Yeah. And now I have a new question for people. I'm going to ask everybody what their bad ideas are. What are your worst ideas? Yeah. I'm really trying to hear those.
Oh, I've got way more, but we'll keep it. We'll keep it at sharks and movie theaters combined. Yeah.
Well, for everybody out there, this was Porter, and he's in New York. So if you know a guy named Porter in New York, say hello to him. Maybe it'll be him.
It probably will be. I walk around.
He's a guy that with the hat, but I guess he doesn't wear the hat anymore. He says
so. That's gone. No, the hat is toast.
But all right, everybody. Until next time, keep it real.